It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, romantic comedies can be a lot of fun, but they usually rely on worn-out story arcs, according to our guest, which can undermine women. We'll learn more in a bit. First, news broke last night that Republican members of the House had voted in a secret session to dismantle the Office of Congressional Ethics. The office was established in 2008 in the aftermath of a string of ethics scandals involving members of Congress and their staff. The office itself is nonpartisan and independent, and the move by Republicans last night would have renamed the office and placed it under the bipartisan House Ethics Committee. But criticism of the move came quickly, and from all across the country, from constituents to Republican president-elect Donald Trump. Today, the House has moved to scrap that plan. But how might this set the tone for the 115th session, which began today? Joining us now is Congressman Mark Pocan. He's a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. Representative Pocan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, what was your first reaction last night when you heard about the vote by House Republicans to dismantle the Office of Congressional Ethics?
I thought it was the fake news that people have been talking about lately because, I know in Wisconsin we had that problem, right? The Republicans in the legislature took apart the Government Accountability Board that I helped to create when I was in the legislature that gave a true independence when it came to ethics. And, of course, they tore it apart. But then to see it replicated here at the federal level, the fact that you would essentially gutted that independence for people to be able to do ethics investigations and members of Congress as our first act of a new Congress, it seemed like it had to be a fake story. And then unfortunately it wasn't. It was a vote of the Republican conference. And then, of course, by today they realized what an incredibly dumb idea it was, and they try to backpedal. But the fact that that was their priority going in on the first day is just really a sad indication of what we might be seeing in the coming weeks.
Well, what is your sense about why that was the first priority? It has been, as you said, discarded now, but initially that was the plan last night. What was behind that?
I have no idea. They think somehow that they were too independent in their investigations and they wanted to curtail it by putting it under a committee where members of Congress essentially would have to give a thumbs up or a thumbs down to any investigations. But the whole idea is you don't want that. You want them to be truly independent investigations. If someone in Congress is doing something wrong, to me, the 101 of being a member of Congress is don't break the law. And you should at least have an ethics force there that's independent that can enforce that to make sure that where there is a lot of potential for abuse of power, that there isn't any, because it's also important for a democracy. So I have no idea why that became their priority. I was told Paul Ryan didn't support it, and his members still voted 2-1 for it, which, again, is another indication of who's actually in control right now. But it just wasn't a great start to what's happened.
And there have been criticisms of the Office of Congressional Ethics, including that maybe it's not always transparent. Do you think there is some merit to potentially reforming the office, if not the way that was maybe sought after last night, in some different way?
Don't do anything wrong, you're never going to appear before it. And if they make a mistake on something, you still have the due process to clear your name and you'll be fine through it. So it didn't make sense that this was a priority. It's not like they campaigned on saying we're going to gut the ethics office. It's not like it was a major issue during the campaigns that the ethics office is this terrible entity that's not operating fairly. And this was, from what I understand, a few members who've been investigated who didn't like it. But, if you've been accused of sexual harassment by your staff, maybe there's some smoke and some fire going on, and, you should have to be held accountable. You're not above the law. So I really am still baffled by why they decided to stain their first day of a new Congress with that.
Now, President-elect Donald Trump came out this morning. He had a couple of tweets that basically said Congress should have better things to do than gut the Office of Congressional Ethics, and it seemed to have some sway in the House there. Is this a moment where it could foreshadow some differences of opinion between the president-elect, soon to be president, and Congress?
Well, I don't know if that had the sway or the fact that we've literally gotten dozens and dozens of phone calls, and probably scores and scores of phone calls today from constituents saying, what are you doing? So I think it really could have just been, they thought they could do this in the dead of night, you know, vote late at night on an amendment change, put it up for a vote today, have it happen without anyone really noticing. And that didn't happen. I think that's what busted them out. But, you know, I'm glad that the president-elect recognizes ethics for us. I hope he also recognizes the ethics when it comes to his financial holdings and what he's going to do with those when he's sworn in 2.5 weeks, because I still have concerns on that as well. For me, I remember in Wisconsin when we had the ethics scandals and we created the Government Accountability Board to be completely independent. It used to be they had to come and beg for money to investigate us. You can kind of figure out how that's going to work. And the fact that any government body would want to push them off into the corner just doesn't bode well. It's really a win for special interests, and it's never a win for the public.
I want to ask you about what you think it might mean, if anything, about the future tone for the 115th Congress. This is a surprise move. It happened in a secret session last night. I mean, do you see this as something that could set a precedent for what's to come, or do you think this was, you know, an exuberant House who wants to do new things, try new things?
Well, I think there is a cockiness, a headbutting, a chest bumping going on right now, because the Republicans think they have the House, the Senate, and the President. They can do whatever they want to, and no one's going to stop them. And this is a good case where I don't think it was necessarily the president-elect's tweet. I think it was the public responding, saying, no, don't do this, and the huge outpouring of calls that we all got that stopped it. So this is how we're going to have to operate. When the Republicans decide that they're this cocky and they can do whatever they want, when it's not in the public interest, the public is going to have to respond, because fundamentally our bosses are the people who elect us. And whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, it's the exact same way it works. So people just have to be very outspoken when this stuff happens. And I think this just shows us right now that there is an incredible amount of arrogance and cockiness going on. And, you know, whether it's be to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, whether it's be for tax reform, whether it be to change Medicare as we know it, those are all things that have serious complications for real people. And we're going to have to be very vigilant as Congress moves forward on these things.
Representative Pocan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
That was Mark Pocan. He represents Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District, and he's a Democrat. He joined us to talk about the move by House Republicans last night to dismantle the independent, nonpartisan Office of Congressional Ethics, which reviews allegations of misconduct. House Republicans moved to reject that plan earlier today. You probably know the basic story. A girl and a guy meet, they're not crazy about each other, and then a series of funny and unexpected events take place. And at the end of it all, everyone but the audience is surprised that the two somehow fall in love. It's the classic arc of romantic comedy. But there's another element that's pretty common across the genre, the way women are talked about and treated, according to our next guest. Take a listen.
Now, she might say, this is a really bad time for me. Or something like, I just need some space. Or my personal favorite, I'm really into my career right now. Do you believe that? Neither does she. You know why? Because she's lying to you.
Want to spend the night in a motel? See what I did? I didn't let it lie.
Harry.
I said I would, and then I didn't.
Harry.
I went the other way.
Harry.
What?
We are just going to be friends, okay?
Great, friends. It's the best thing.
I know ladies don't seek to seem too easy.
Mr. Collins, I am perfectly serious. You could not make me happy, and I'm convinced I'm the last woman in the world who could make you happy.
I flatter myself, cousin, that your refusal is merely a natural delicacy.
Vivian, I'm speaking to you. Come back here. I hate to point out the obvious, but you are, in fact, a hooker, and you are my employee.
Look, you don't own me. I decide, okay? I say who, I say when, I say who.
It's not a bad time for her. She doesn't need any space. And she may be into her career, but what she's really saying is, get away from me now, or possibly try harder, stupid.
And those are clips from various romantic rom-coms. Hitch, When Harry Met Sally, Pride and Prejudice, and Pretty Woman. In a lot of those movies, women are often struggling to make clear that they're not interested in a man. My next guest says that the genre is partly to blame for the way women are undermined in day-to-day life. Megan Garber joins me now. Megan, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, you write that romantic comedies, like the clips we just heard there, they tend to blur the line between romantic exertion and sexual violence. Can you give me some examples of where you see that?
Sure. Well, I think, I mean, Hitch was a perfect example of that in that opening monologue. Just this idea that, you know, she may say one thing, but she very well could mean the other. And just that sort of ignoring of what she says can actually, I think, be really problematic. Because if you ignore what a woman says, you know, you can always just accept that, you know, if you are very persistent, then yes will eventually be the answer.
And you talk about and you write about the romantic comedy Say Anything, where John Cusack plays Lloyd Dobler. This is one of the quintessential romantic comedies. And I don't know, I kind of liked that movie in the 80s, and now Reframed Through Your Eyes, now I can see it's kind of creepy. He shows up with a boombox outside her window and won't leave. But tell us about how you see that particular scene.
Yeah, I mean, I think so much of it comes down to, you know, what the woman wants. If she is into Lloyd Dobler, then that's a wonderful romantic gesture. And if she's not, then it's going to be completely creepy. You have this guy who you're not interested in showing up in front of your bedroom. The show How I Met Your Mother actually frames this in a really interesting way. I think they have what's called the Dobler-Dahmer theory. And the theory goes, basically, if you are into the romantic pursuer, then you're going to see, you know, showing up at your bedroom window or something equivalent to that as supremely romantic and a wonderful gesture. If you are not into the person, then you might see them more as akin to Jeffrey Dahmer, who is, of course, the serial killer. So it really does come down to, you know, how you see the person who's pursuing you.
A pretty big spectrum there. Well, in that particular movie, I think that was something like late 80s, Say Anything, the Lloyd Dobler example, and that was a long time ago. Have things changed since then in romantic comedies?
I think they have a little bit. I think that we just as a general culture have become a little bit more aware of the problems and pitfalls that might be embedded in romantic comedies. I mean, even the clip you played of Pretty Woman, you know, she's saying, I say who, I say when. You know, so there's an awareness that women need to have agency in this dynamic as well. But I think still there's a lot of potentially problematic things out there. There's the site TV Tropes has a whole section of its website called Stalking is Love that lists, you know, all these different times that rom-coms have sort of equated stalking with grand romantic gestures. And I do think that can sort of, in real life, it can actually confuse people on both ends. You know, where is that line? And how do you sort of tell the difference between what is romantic and what is creepy?
Right. And you mentioned the agency of the women themselves. And that's another problem you some of the time have with these movies is that the women, they're kind of wimpy about things, or they don't have much of a personality at all. And it's just all about the man's pursuit. How do you think that maybe takes itself as a stamp for how women should behave in real life?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does sort of assume, you know, this kind of hunting dynamic where the men are the hunters and the women are the hunted. And you know, it sort of solidifies these very regressive ideas about how, you know, in this case, women and men should relate to each other. So, yeah, I think it does sort of it's very problematic in a very sort of subtle way, I guess.
I think about the heyday of the romantic comedy as sort of being the Meg Ryan era. Have things changed in the way? I mean, there are still these grand gestures, as you talked about, but do you think maybe the women themselves written in these roles have changed in romantic comedies?
I think a little bit. And you know, we're especially seeing some interesting things on TV in that regard, not just in films, but I think of The Mindy Project, for example, which is basically a TV series-long rom-com in which Mindy Kaling, who she herself as a creator has said that she's a big fan of the rom-com as a genre, but she, I think, goes out of her way to sort of, you know, make that character very empowered when it comes to her romantic relationships. And, you know, there's a lot of decision-making on her part as well as on the part of her various boyfriends.
We're talking with Megan Garber right now. She's a staff writer at The Atlantic, where she covers culture. And you can see her article about how romantic comedies can undermine women on the Central Time Facebook page. And talking about that undermine aspect of our conversation now, do you think that women do get undermined? You know, if there is a persistent pursuer who's trying to date a woman, get her to like him, do you think that women today are undermined when they say, no, I'm not really into you because of movies like the ones we just listened to a little bit of?
I certainly do. I think, you know, and it's subtle. I don't want to overstate the point. I mean, you know, these are movies. This is Hollywood. You know, these are obviously sort of fantastical representations of the world at large. But there have been studies, I should say, you know, of the way that people sort of take in rom-coms as movies, and people who saw rom-coms were much less apt to see stalking behavior, as we would define it sort of legally, as something that would be problematic. The rom-coms essentially sort of condition them to think, no, that's just romance. It's okay. So, you know, there are these connections between Hollywood and the real world. And I can't help thinking, actually, back to, there was an article that got passed around earlier this fall, written by a man who was trying to advise fellow men about how to talk to a woman wearing headphones. I don't know if you saw that article, but it got a lot of negative attention on the internet, and it was basically the step-by-step guide for how to, if you came across a woman in the wild who was wearing headphones, how to disarm her and make her talk to you. And it was just gross. There's really no other way to say it. But I actually felt bad for the author, because, you know, he could well have thought that this is what you do, you know, to make a woman like you, is you just sort of persistently disarm her. So it's I think it's a very complicated thing.
Well, yeah, you used the word confusion before, and you said there is confusion among men. I mean, maybe some men do have kind of creepy intentions, but maybe a lot of men just want to be romantic. And if that's what they're seeing, how does anyone know what's genuinely romantic and what is, you know, crossing a line?
Exactly. This article actually came out of a conversation I was having with some coworkers about that very thing, that, you know, behavior that they had witnessed in public. I live in D.C., so on the D.C. metro, you know, men coming up to them and, you know, trying to get them to you know, take off their earbuds and all of these things. And it truly is, I think, just a matter of confusion, really, and not, you know, the men not knowing how to behave, everyone in general sort of being a little bit confused about where those lines fall. And but I do think that often you can look to the rom-coms and say, well, they're not treating women as the women themselves would want to be treated in those cases.
Right, and gender norms seem like they are shifting to a certain extent. Maybe not as much as we think, but I mean, it seems like there's ambiguity about, you know, how much persistence a woman, you know, would enjoy when someone is interested in her. And maybe vice versa, too, if a woman is pursuing someone else that she's interested in dating. I mean, do you think, where is a healthy place to look, I guess?
Ah, that's a great question. I'm not exactly sure where there's one, you know, sort of definitive place. I do think, actually, though, that television, for my money, in terms of just cultural output, television is doing a lot more interesting things than film in a lot of ways, in large part because it can move just slightly faster than film. But I think we're seeing a lot more of, first of all, not just heteronormative relationships. You know, there are a lot of different types of relationships on display in TV. I think there's just a lot more diversity on TV in general. So that's probably a better place to look right now than films. Of course, that's a massive generalization, but I think that would be one place.
I mean, do you think some of these old rom-coms, do they still hold up for you? Do you still enjoy them? I mean, I would have said, I'm still going to say it, When Harry Met Sally is one of my favorite movies. And, you know, now I do sort of see the creeptastic behavior in that movie that I didn't see before. Same with Lloyd Dobler. I mean, can we still watch these things, or is it better to kind of, you know, shelve them for a while?
I still love them, and I still watch them, and I agree. When Harry Met Sally is one of my favorite movies as well. I love Sleepless in Seattle, all those. I think it's just a matter of sort of having that sense of not suspending disbelief when it comes to watching those movies, that you have that sort of healthy distance of, you know, this is fantasy, this is fairy tale, this is, you know, what Hollywood at a certain point decided was normal when it comes to romantic relationships. And you can still enjoy them a lot, you know, with that attitude, but I think as long as you have a little bit of a guard up in terms of this isn't really behavior that would translate to the real world, then they can just be, you know, fairy tales and enjoyable.
Well, right. Nice. So if you watch it with a teenage daughter, say, I mean, do you owe it to her to sort of explain that maybe this is not very acceptable behavior? You probably don't want this in your dating partner.
I would do that, certainly. And also to teenage sons as well, to just say, you know, girls might not like this. Like, they seem to like it on the screen. You might want to actually talk to them and have more of a human-to-human conversation. I think that's one of the things that I didn't like about the rom-coms, was that it sort of, in a lot of ways, takes the humanity out of the equation in the guise of the most, you know, human thing imaginable, which is romance. They sort of take away the real personalities. So I think as long as we come at them with an idea that really what you want is human-to-human interaction, then it's good.
I'm thinking about some of the movies with Amy Schumer, Trainwreck, for example, where the woman is sort of is cast in a mode that would typically have been the man's role, where he's sleeping around or drinking or playing the field, not wanting to settle down. Is that kind of gender typecast reversal? Does that work, do you think?
I think it does for what it is. I love Trainwreck. I found it refreshing to find a woman playing that role. I don't think that it's 100% of a good thing. You know, there's going to always be issues with someone who is just so kind of selfish and, you know, not behaving in a way that's good for everyone involved in the movie. But I did find it nice to find that gender flipping going on. And I think, you know, we're all experimenting. We're all sort of figuring things out together, and movies are going to reflect that. TV is going to reflect that. And I think that, you know, Trainwreck is one more step, you know, toward coming up to something that hopefully is a little more humanistic and nice to see on the screen.
And as we wrap up, you mentioned TV is a good place to look for healthy romantic models. Are there any of those older movies, though, that you think do pass the test and are just plain romantic?
Well, I would say one of my favorites is His Girl Friday, which obviously goes back into the distant past of cinema. But I think, you know, that witty repartee that they have, I think there's something really wonderful about that just kind of, there's a nice equality there despite their different, professions. And obviously, despite the title of the movie, there's a way that they were equals. So I think that's a nice thing to look at. I think throughout cinematic history, you can find sort of examples that buck the trends of their times, and those are always good to focus on.
Megan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Megan Garber, staff writer at The Atlantic, where she covers culture, and you can see her article about how romantic comedies can undermine women on the Central Time Facebook page. Today, the 115th Congress was sworn into service. Republicans have control of the House, Senate, and the executive branch, and they have what some have called the most sweeping conservative agenda in decades. But Republicans are still arguing about some of the high-profile issues likely to come up this session, including how to replace Obamacare and how aggressively to investigate Russian hacking in the presidential election. Amanda Turkle joins us now to talk about the agenda for this new Congress. She's a senior political reporter and politics managing editor for Huffington Post. Amanda, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, earlier today, we spoke to Democratic Congressman Mark Pocan from Wisconsin, getting his reaction to House Republicans' now scrapped plan to dismantle the Independent Office of Congressional Ethics. And Amanda, what is your reaction to that story?
Well, it's sort of amazing, I think, how much the House Republicans screwed up their first day of what should have been a triumphant return to Congress, when they're going to have control of both chambers and soon they'll have a president of their own party in the White House. Usually the first day of Congress is sort of a friendly, fun affair. You have the vice president swearing in the members and chatting with the families. You have new members sort of getting lost as they try to find their way around the Hill. It's just sort of a day for a lighter fare. But for Republicans, today was dominated by this talk about how they were trying to gut this independent watchdog that investigates Congress. And, Republicans decided not to do that, and they admitted that they were shamed publicly. They said they got a lot of calls to their offices telling them not to do that. They didn't like the media attention, and even Donald Trump tweeted, you know, about why were they doing this on the first day of Congress. So for now, they're not doing it, but it was a bad first day for them.
So with that bad first day there, what is next for this Congress?
Well, I didn't expect this to be first, but they have said that, you know, basically Republicans have a laundry list of things they've been promising their base that they would do. And now I think you will see GOP voters hold them accountable. you know, you guys have been promising to repeal Obamacare, to repeal regulations, to do tax reform. You've been promising to do all this, and you've been using Obama as an excuse. So now that he'll be gone and Trump will be in office, are you actually going to do this? And obviously, making promises and having all that rhetoric is a lot easier than coming up with specifics and getting legislation through Congress.
Do we know what is at the top of the agenda for Republicans? This one today was a surprise, the move last night, but based on what we know, what are some things that Republicans want to accomplish quickly and might be maybe more low-hanging fruit for them?
Well, I think you'll see Republicans try to get Trump to roll back some of President Obama's executive actions. And, you know, there have been a lot that he has sort of promised to do, but, you know, we don't exactly know where he will go first, but there are ones on immigration, for example, making it easier for some undocumented immigrants to stay in this country. There are environmental regulations that Republicans would like to see Trump roll back, and a lot of those can be done pretty easily. So I think that's where they would like to see the executive branch start. Republicans have to move very quickly on repealing Obamacare because that has been something they've been running on for years and years and years. But, you know, again, the problem is if you decide to repeal parts of Obamacare, what are you going to do with the people who rely on it for their health coverage? And Republicans have still not put out a detailed, comprehensive legislative package to replace Obamacare that sort of does all the good things that people like and they say they want to keep, like letting young people stay on their insurance, making sure people aren't discriminated against for pre-existing conditions. But how do you balance that with actually providing incentives for insurers to offer those things?
Right. So given that, do you think that repealing Obamacare could be something that happens further down the road?
Potentially, yes. I think that, you know, you could see some sort of, again, sort of ceremonial thing in repealing it. But in terms of actually replacing it, that is not going to be something that happens for a very long time, and Republicans are starting to acknowledge that. You're also going to see resistance from some states that have Republican governors who have expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. And if Republicans repeal Obamacare, the states will be suddenly left with this problem of what to do with all these people who don't have insurance. And so Republicans are getting some pushback from governors within their own party as well. So obviously there are a lot of details. That's why, you know, the first time when this passed, when the Affordable Care Act passed, this was so complicated. You know, you heard so many complaints about how people couldn't read the whole bill, how it was so long. And that's because this is very, very complicated. And Republicans still haven't worked out those details. And they're now sort of realizing that they're going to have to.
We're talking with Amanda Turkle right now, senior political reporter and politics managing editor for The Huffington Post, taking a look at the agenda for the Republican-led 115th Congress. And one issue that has caused division in the Republican Party is a possible investigation into the Russian cyber attacks during the presidential race. What are the sticking points there?
Well, one sticking point is, I mean, honestly, just how seriously to take this, because you have the president-elect, Donald Trump, saying, you know, we should all really just move on. Computers make our lives complicated. That's the real problem. It's not the Russians. And we'll never really know who hacked into the computers or if there was hacking, so we should just move on. That's Donald Trump's position. There are a few lawmakers who, you know, are Trump allies who support that, but the vast majority of lawmakers say they do believe that this should be investigated. This is a problem. One of the sticking points is where this should be investigated. Some lawmakers, including some Republicans and Democrats, want a new sort of independent panel, a special panel convened in Congress so that they can look at this. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell wants this to go through the Intelligence Committee as normal. So sort of who looks at this and how it's done is going to be something that still needs to be worked out. But I think there will be enough Democrats and Republicans who continue to make this an issue so that it doesn't go away.
Does it look likely that there could be friction between Congress and President-elect Donald Trump over this? As you pointed out earlier, he's got a different perspective on these alleged cyber attacks, whereas Congress, you know, with an investigation, wants to know more. So might we see some friction there?
Absolutely. I think you definitely will. You've already seen this a little bit with Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, who's obviously very outspoken. He's a big critic of Russia, and he's also been a big critic of Donald Trump. And he's been speaking out quite a bit, saying that this is absolutely something that needs to be investigated. And he and his good friend, Senator John McCain from Arizona, I think will both continue to make sure that this is an issue. And they certainly don't mind angering Trump.
Now, the Senate is going to start hearings on President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet nominees. What do you think will be first on the table there?
Well, I think that one person who will get through probably pretty quickly is Jeff Sessions, Senator Jeff Sessions from Alabama, who is Donald Trump's pick to be attorney general. He's a member of the chamber. He has a lot of friends in Congress, obviously, and everyone is expecting pretty easy confirmation for him. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to necessarily be pretty. He was denied a federal judgeship decades ago because of sort of racist comments he made, quite honestly. And he, managed to get into the Senate and now is nominated to be attorney general. But his nomination troubles many, many people, many Democrats, many civil rights advocates. And so Democrats, I think, will be speaking out very strongly against him, but I don't think that will necessarily be enough to doom his nomination, because these nominees need only 51 votes, a majority, to pass because of rule changes that were put in place by Democrats. So 51, you know, Republicans have the majority, so it looks like people like Sessions will probably get through.
And as you said, you know, there is a possibility for Democratic opposition. Are there any that you think Democrats could pick up some opposition support from Republicans? Are there any these Trump picks that could have the possibility of being blocked with that in mind?
Well, the one that's been causing the most problems so far for Trump is Rex Tillerson, the Exxon CEO, who is Trump's pick to be Secretary of State. He has made, you know, sort of friendly comments about Russia, and that is something that concerns some senators, again, people like Lindsey Graham. And we've seen people like Senator, you know, Senator Rand Paul, for example, say that if he is going to, Senator Rand Paul, Senator Lindsey Graham, they've been basically saying that they want to see where he stands, Rex Tillerson stands, on sanctions on Russia, on cybersecurity, on issues like that, before they support him. And so, you know, their votes could be consequential, because Trump basically needs every Republican he can get to get these nominees through.
We're talking right now about the agenda for the 115th Congress with Amanda Turkle of The Huffington Post. And we're taking your calls right now at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see Congress tackle first? What priorities should be first? And what did you think of the House Republican plans to target the independent ethics panel? Are you glad that House Republicans decided to reverse that plan that happened earlier today? You can call us now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're picking up our discussion right now about the agenda for the new Congress with Amanda Turkle, a political reporter for The Huffington Post. And you can join us at 800-642-1234. What priorities do you think this Congress should have? What issues would you like to see lawmakers tackle in the next maybe couple of years? And what are your hopes for the 115th Congress? You can call us now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. And let's talk about Congressman Paul Ryan now, Amanda. He's from Wisconsin, and he easily won his reelection as House Speaker. What do you think about how his relationship might evolve with Donald Trump?
Well, they're going to have to work together a bit more. We saw sort of a tortured relationship during the campaign where Paul Ryan was reluctant to embrace Trump, but eventually did, although he didn't embrace him that much. But they need to work together if they're going to get things done. That doesn't mean that Paul Ryan will enjoy it necessarily. He and Donald Trump are not the same type of Republican. But Paul Ryan will also be under a lot of pressure to condemn Trump, as you saw when Donald Trump made offensive comments about women, for example. There's a lot of pressure on Paul Ryan. He should come out. He should say something. He should disavow Trump. And he's going to have to be dealing not only with Trump, but with the many sort of factions of his caucus who don't always agree. So it's you know, it's a tough job, and you saw this today with the Office of Congressional Ethics. The leadership, GOP leadership, said that they did not want to go forward with changing the office on the first day of the session, but it was something that their caucus wanted to do. Nevertheless, Paul Ryan put out a statement in support of it, and then a little while later, the caucus unanimously agreed to hold on this for now and not to go forward with it. So, you know, the GOP, yes, they won the election, but it isn't by far from a unified party, and Paul Ryan's sort of at the center of that and trying to manage it.
Right, and there is, as you said, a pressure on congressional Republicans to do things, to pass legislation. There has been a lot of gridlock in Washington for the past 8 years and beyond in some respects, too. So do you think that there is the will among Republicans to act in cohesion, or are there still these competing strands within the Republican Party, including those which may have been more or less supportive of Donald Trump when it comes to actually passing things and getting things done?
Oh, there are absolutely competing factions still. I mean, even Donald Trump, what he wants isn't necessarily always in line with what Republicans want to do, and what the House wants to do isn't always in line with what the Senate wants to do, for example. You know, Donald Trump talks about sort of infrastructure spending, but a little bit less on how to pay for it, example. And, you know, Republicans for years have been talking about deficits, and they need to keep deficits down, and they don't want to do too much spending. I mean, these are all things that will conflict with each other. And Republicans, you know, I think the leadership recognizes that they need to get things done. They have the power. They need to finally live up to the rhetoric they've been putting forward so many years when they've been blaming the gridlock on Democrats and Obama. You know, Obama's out of the way. Democrats are largely out of the way, so now it's their turn. But, you know, not every member of their party wants to do that. Many members of their party are, you know, sort of much more purists, and I think will take stands against that and maybe politically unpopular stands that will put their leadership into a corner. So it's, you know, it's definitely not smooth sailing for Republicans.
The Tea Party was a force in the last 8 years. How strong is that particular strand of the GOP right now?
I think the Tea Party has changed a little bit. You've seen, you know, you see less talk about the Tea Party. You see fewer Tea Party rallies. Now they've sort of evolved into these Trump voters, these people who were sort of had, you know, sort of, and the way they started, sort of a populist strain. They were mad about the bailout of Wall Street. They're mad about sort of the rich getting richer. And you've seen that sort of sentiment transfer over to people who like Donald Trump and liked his rhetoric, even though, you know, he's obviously very wealthy and has filled his cabinet with billionaires.
We're talking to Amanda Turgle right now, senior political reporter, politics managing editor for the Huffington Post. And we're talking about the agenda for the 115th Congress. And let's take a caller now. We've got Andrew with us in Eau Claire. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I believe Congress should legalize cannabis and or remove it as a Schedule I drug, which would allow states to more easily legalize it, which, as we all know, saves tax dollars, keeps nonviolent offenders out of prison. I believe it's an issue that's important to Democrats. It's an issue that's important to Republicans. And it really does affect people on a day-to-day basis. I think it's very important for this country moving forward, socially speaking. And I just want to say thank you for taking my call, and I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Andrew, thanks for that. And legalization of marijuana has been picking up steam nationally. So, Amanda, where does it stand right now, do you think, with Congress and with President-elect Trump?
Well, it's definitely been picking up steam in the states, and I don't think we'll see much movement in Congress on this, and you certainly won't see a lot in the Trump administration. I mean, with Jeff Sessions, if he gets confirmed as Attorney General, he has long been antagonistic toward legalizing marijuana. I mean, you know, when he was denied his federal judgeship, it was part of the comments he made in the 1980s was that he thought the KKK was okay until he found out that they smoked pot. Obviously, we've come a long way since the 1980s, but, you know, he's called marijuana reform a tragic mistake. He's gone after the Obama administration for not cracking down enough on this. So I don't think you will see much movement from the Trump administration on this, and you should be watching the states for what they do instead.
Looking at the office of the vice president now, what role do you think Mike Pence is going to play, maybe as a liaison between Donald Trump and Congress?
He'll play a pivotal role there. He's expected to be on the Hill all the time, attending Republican caucus meetings. And I mean, he was in Congress. He knows how Congress works. He's very well liked there. And he's well liked by people who don't necessarily like Donald Trump, the establishment Republicans in Washington and particularly in Congress. I mean, he's a very socially conservative in areas where Donald Trump hasn't always been. He, you know, led the fight to try to defund Planned Parenthood. He's long been an opponent of LGBT rights. He's very outspoken on all this, and he was as governor of Indiana. And Republicans just like him. You know, he's a nice, friendly guy. They feel like they can work with him. They feel like they know where he's coming from. And so I think he will be the main liaison between Donald Trump and Congress.
Now, you were there today as we've had the 115th Congress sworn in, and we've been talking this half hour about there being a sea change. The executive branch, Congress, both chambers controlled by Republicans. Does it feel different there on the Hill today?
Well, I was actually not on the Hill. I am in Washington, but I was not on the Hill today. But all of Washington feels different. I mean, you have, you know, everything getting ready for the inauguration. You have Democrats sort of transitioning out of their jobs. You have all the new Republicans in town on the Hill and whatnot. And absolutely, I mean, things feel incredibly different. It's exciting. I think Republicans are all very exciting and very optimistic. Again, this was not how they wanted to begin the first day of the new session. But there's still, again, this excitement that we finally have control. We finally have the power. Now, what are we going to do with it? And that, I think, makes some Republicans a bit nervous, perhaps ones who know how unwieldy the caucus is. But they're excited. You know, they can introduce legislation now. They have a better chance of getting it passed. And now it's just sort of waiting for Obama to leave office and for Trump to take over.
Let's take a quick call here. We've got Jesse with us in Shell Lake. Hi, Jesse.
Hello. I just wanted to say I hope that Congress really starts to focus their new agenda with the Affordable Care Act and reworking that to make it better, take some things that are good from what President Obama did and fix the bad things, and then also start working towards some economic growth, because I think nothing would be better for our country moving forward in the upcoming months than some stimulation of the economy. And then I did just want to comment on the last caller's comment, Andrews, that I just think we have a little bigger fish to fry right now than worrying about the legalization of marijuana.
Jesse, thank you for that call. And Amanda, as we wrap up, what do you say to Jesse?
Well, I think that, you know, in terms of economic growth, that's basically what that was a big part of Trump's plan. You know how to get things done. I build things. Vote for me. And one way that Republicans want to do that is through tax reform, tax breaks across the board, tax breaks for businesses. But again, there's a lot of disagreement between the House and the Senate right now on what exactly that will look like, how you offset that so it doesn't affect the deficit by trillions of dollars, and what exactly the timeline looks like in terms of repealing Obamacare. I mean, there are many good things about Obamacare that even Republicans say they like. Those very popular provisions, for example, not getting kicked off when you're a young adult on your parents' health insurance and the pre-existing conditions. But you can't just keep the good things. I mean, I'm sure, you know, Democrats wanted to do that, too. But part of the reason is you need to compromise and get insurers bought in.
And we have to leave it there. Amanda, thank you so much for joining us. That was Amanda Turkle, senior political reporter and politics managing editor for The Huffington Post.